Let's give a little thought to making our own story have a happy ending.
Junk Food Dinner, episode 55. This week, in celebration of 420, we take a look at three cannabis-friendly films. Up first, two burnouts go on an epic quest for fine chicks in the 1994 comedy The Stoned Age. Then rock and roll music and sci-fi collide in the iconic R-rated animated fantasy film Heavy Metal from 1981. And finally, a pot-smoking biker is turned into a mutant turkey who kills drug dealers in the truly bizarre 1972 horror film Blood Freak.
Put a little insanity on your potato.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 55. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, in honor of everyone's favorite stoner holiday, 420, we'll be taking a look at The Stoned Age from 1994, Heavy Metal from 1981, and finally Blood Freak from 1972. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week?
Doing delightfully.
I'm all right.
Good, good. What you guys been up to this week? Anything fun?
Not really. I was sick, and now I'm starting to feel better. The weather's been real weird here. It's like real nice, but then it storms for like 6 hours, and then it's just kind of gross. But did get in some quality roof time. But yeah, nothing terribly exciting since last we spoke.
Right.
Which was only like a couple days ago, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the same thing. Since last we talked, I've just been watching these NBA playoffs, and they've been delightful.
Nice.
So it's been a fun weekend for me.
Cool.
Of hating LeBron James. I've been hating LeBron James all weekend.
Yeah. On Saturday, April 16th, it was Record Store Day, so I visited many of my favorite local record shops, and that's always a good time. I think that's a really cool idea. A lot of artists release like exclusive vinyl that's only sold on Record Store Day at independent retailers, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger every year. I mean, we have a couple really good record stores here in Cincinnati, and they were all like packed out with people, like lines out the door for these records, which is really cool. So, I mean, I think it's a good way for people to get into records and supporting local stores. So, I think that's really cool. And spent way too much money on records and had a good time. But yeah, so I mean, in that vein, I'd like to urge everybody, if you have a really cool record store or video store or independent comic book shop or anything in your area that you like, I know you can get everything for free on the internet these days, but go spend some fucking money and support some local businesses because they need it.
Yeah. I had to work literally all day on Saturday, so I couldn't go to any of that. And it was really nasty out anyway, but there was a lot of, I looked at the Record Store Day site, and there was a lot of cool vinyl coming out. So sad I missed that. And I did see that, Somebody put up the Big Star third test press thing that they put out on Record Store Day was up by the end of the day on eBay for well over $200, which is sort of disgusting.
Yeah, I should have bought that. I saw many copies of that.
Yeah, it was $40 retail, and
that's why
it was
the
same day. Yeah, I know, but yeah, $200.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if you buy some of these, because they only come out for like one day only, and if you buy some of them, you can definitely flip a profit on eBay if that's what you're into, but I'm just into buying music for myself, and I'm not really looking to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and then fittingly for tonight's show, I went and saw Your Highness in the theater.
Oh, how was that?
Fucking awful, dude.
Really?
Oh, God, it was really bad. And I went in there with the expectation that it was going to be stupid, and it far exceeded my expectations. And, you know, I was kind of excited about it. I mean, I knew it was going to be silly, but
yeah.
you know, I like Danny McBride a lot. I think, you know, Eastbound and Down and Fist Footway are some of the funnier pieces of comedy to come out in the last 10 years, but it was just so dumb. I mean, the whole premise of it, and I guess you can gather this from the trailer or whatever, it's like, it's medieval times, but we cuss and smoke weed. Like, and they really just run with that, and that's really the only wheels this thing has for 90 minutes. And yeah, it is embarrassingly bad. I mean, I didn't laugh out loud once during the whole thing. I mean, there was some interesting things about it. Like, they used like a real puppet for this, like weird wizard guy. And, you know, it was kind of like reminiscent of, some old Jim Henson stuff, like, Dark Crystal or, Labyrinth.
Cool.
And like, that was cool. But even that, like the comedy in that scene was so tedious and bad that it ruined the puppetry for me. But yeah, it is not a good movie by any means.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, I hadn't really heard anything about it, but you know, I like a lot of those people involved, and I thought it looked dumb as well, but I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. But I'm glad that you jumped on that grenade.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so let's get into some listener feedback. We had some good feedback on our past fan appreciation episodes on Facebook. Elise Miley says, the latest shows are great. I always love seeing what piece of crap you guys review next. Love it. So thank you, Elise, and we will continue to review pieces of crap for you guys. That's what I hear. Joe Tino also said, oh, fuck, I bought Full Moon High on VHS the other day, and Kevin was calling it one of the worst movies ever in the latest episode. I hope you lie, or at least it's shitty in a good way, but probably it sucks. What a great buy. Now I will listen to Junk Food Dinner before I enter the video store, not after. So, thanks, Joe.
Yeah,
that's good
policy.
Yeah, and I feel bad for your recent purchase, because Full Moon High really is fucking awful. I mean, good luck. I mean, it's so tedious. You know, like Your Highness, it is a comedy which fails to make you laugh on any way. And I love werewolf movies. I will buy any werewolf movie that comes across my path, and that is one I can definitely tell you to skip.
So up next, we have a different kind of piece of listener feedback. Joey Tuna on Twitter has a problem, and I am not sure what this movie is, but hopefully someone out there in junk food land can help us figure this out. So I need you guys' help with a movie I can't remember the name or plot of. It's totally tripping me out. It was a weird movie with these human-looking demons. I remember the main guy was named Bill, and they introduced him in a fight in a fancy dining room as Bill the Bastard. Bill killed his enemy by literally putting his hand through the quote-unquote southern exit and turned him inside out. I assure you this wasn't a porn. It was a real film. I remember little else about the film and figured y'all would know. Definitely mid-90s HBO type stuff. It was obvious they were trying to use the Phantasm vibe. Creepy, cheesy movie. So if any of you guys know what that is, drop us a line at jfdpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm trying to rack my brain. I can't for the life of me think of what that would be. I don't think I've seen that.
Me either. I have no idea.
Sounds awesome, though. Huh? If we do figure it out, I think we'll be obligated to cover it on the show.
Yeah, especially if all of our listeners help us figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, I think that somebody gets turned inside out like that through their butt cheeks in one of the Feast movies, but I doubt that's what he's talking about. But maybe.
And one last piece of listener feedback. Sean Bryant says, I surprised a bit by the stuff going 0-3, but still enjoyed the show greatly. Perhaps a listener suggested movies could become a semi-regular feature. Yeah, absolutely. We would love to do that more often, because you guys send us great movie recommendations, and we get so many that we have plenty to cover. But if you do want to send us a recommendation, or if you just want to give us feedback on the show, yeah, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 347-746-JUNK. Follow-up, Sean also said, I'd love an in-space episode. Don't forget that Critters 4 also happened in space. Yeah, we are definitely going to do that somewhere down the line. I think that's a great idea, because there's a lot of horror franchises that, for some inexplicable reason, decided to go to space for one of their installments. So, yeah, look forward to that in the near future.
I think Critters 4 being in space shouldn't really count, because didn't they come from space?
That's true.
Yeah, they're just from space.
Yeah, they're always from space.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And whereas like Leprechaun and Jason, they had nothing to do with space originally. Yeah. Making it even more perplexing.
But space is scary, to be fair. I mean, yeah. It's always dark in space. Always dark. In the dark is
that's
scary.
That's true.
It's a logical step, I feel.
And in space, no one can hear you eat ice cream.
There's no ice cream in space. That's silly.
There's astronaut ice cream, dude.
That's the tagline for Killer Clowns in Outer Space. All right, well, that being said, let's get into this week's nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
So it looks like They Live, the original source material, is kind of getting a reboot. The original 1963 story, 8 o'clock in the morning, which the 1988 John Carpenter movie They Live was based on, is getting a remake with director Matt Reeves, who did the remake Let Me In, and the movie Cloverfield will be directing. Reeves has been stated in several interviews that this is not a remake of They Live. This is actually a retelling of the original source material. And is not going to be similar to the John Carpenter film. He says, I saw an opportunity to do a movie that was very point of view driven, a psychological science fiction thriller that explores this guy's nightmare. There could be a desperate love story at the center of this. He said, Carpenter took a satirical view of the material and the larger political implication that were being controlled. I am very drawn to the emotional side, the nightmare experience with the paranoia of Invaders of the Body Snatchers or a Roman Polanski style film. So it'll be interesting to see what Reeves does with the material. I liked his version of Let Me In. I actually have never seen Cloverfield, but yeah, I'll be excited to see this. I mean, I love the John Carpenter They Live, and you know, I think it would be hard to kind of copy that style. So it looks like he's going to try to take this in a different direction, but nevertheless, I'll be interested to see how this turns out.
I love Cloverfield, and I think we've hashed out my thoughts on the Let the Right One In remake enough, but I don't know. I guess I want to give this guy the benefit of the doubt because I thought Cloverfield was great, but come on. They Live is fine. There's no reason to tackle the source material.
Yeah.
It just seems unnecessary, especially when his efforts could be focused on making something original and awesome.
What if the stuff he does that is original would not be awesome, though?
I don't know that it's just a bad movie, but, like, at least you can't say, like, oh, well, this sucks, but the original rules. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of making something rather than remaking something.
No, I know what you're saying. The next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like Bradley Cooper is going to be starring in a remake of The Crow. Bradley Cooper is close to signing a deal to star in the forthcoming remake of the 1990s fantasy thriller The Crow. Bradley Cooper, who recently starred in the movies Limitless, The A-Team, and The Hangover, also in one of my favorite comedies of all time, Wet Hot American Summer. But last week, Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, the filmmaker behind 28 Weeks Later, was announced as the director of this Crow remake, and now there are reports that the lovable Bradley Cooper will be starring as the Crow, which seems like fucking bizarre casting.
A joke.
Yeah, I mean, this does sound like a April Fool's Day style joke because, I mean, when I think of the Crow, you know, Brandon Lee, you know, he was, you know, son of Bruce Lee, you know, fairly badass. Bradley Cooper, not who I imagine. And God damn it, why another fucking Crow movie? Haven't we been punished enough with that?
Yeah.
All those terrible sequels and...
I think we might have talked about this before, but have you guys seen The Dead One?
No.
It's like a knockoff Crow movie starring Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh, God.
So that was immediately what I thought of when you said that Bradley Cooper was going to be the new Crow is something on par with that. Yeah, I think I should just check out for the Nerd News segment from now on because it just seems like every week it's like, oh, this is getting remade. Here's a board game movie. Someone died. So
I'm sorry. This is the way nerd news goes.
No, I know. It's not like you make the news. But yeah, my stance is not going to change. I'm not going to get on board for the Crow remake starring anyone.
Right.
So I just don't get it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where this has to pass through X amount of people before it's like good to go. So X amount of people were like, oh, Bradley Cooper, cool.
Yeah. The next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like World War Z is actually back in production, and they found a director of photography in Robert Richardson, who was the DP on such films as Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and Shutter Island. So Once Fear Dead, the silver screen adaptation of Max Brooks' zombie bestseller World War Z, has recently sprung back to life stronger than ever. It seems like World War Z has been in development for over 2 years now, and at one point last month, it looked as though the money troubles might shut it down altogether. But since finding additional financing, the project has been fast-tracked. Mark Foster, who directed Monsters Ball and Quantum of Solace, is still attached to direct, and a script from J. Michael Straczynski, who wrote the script for Thor. It's also produced by Brad Pitt's production company, and Brad Pitt himself is set to star in the movie. Have you guys read the Max Brooks book, World War Z? He's the same guy that wrote the Zombie Survival Guide back in 2003. So he's obviously a fairly well-known zombie writer. Have you guys read any of his stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't really like the Survival Guide that much. It's kind of jokey and silly, but I think that World War Z is one of my favorite books. I've read it like 7 times or something. I constantly am rereading that in between Bret Easton Ellis books. It's marvelous, and I'm super excited for a movie version. Even though I think it'll be kind of weird to, I think it'll be hard to make into a movie, but I'm still excited for it because it's a hell of a book.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's got a lot of talented people attached to it, so I hope it fares well. Because, I mean, the zombie thing, while it's getting kind of played out with the whole Walking Dead, and there seems like, you know, Zombieland, it seems like there's a ton of zombie stuff. Like, you go to a bookstore now, and, you know, like a Barnes & Noble, and there's whole sections on teen zombie fiction and stuff. It seems like it's getting fairly oversaturated, but, you know, I always welcome a good zombie pick to the big screen, so hopefully it'll turn out well.
Yeah, and hopefully no zombies are riding horses or picking up guns or anything like that. George Romero.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned Bret Easton Ellis. It looks like your favorite author is in a little bit of controversy recently. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, indeed I did. It's very bizarre and silly to me.
Yeah, shortly after Victoria Jackson, star of Saturday Night Live and JFD favorite UHF, made some disparaging remarks about the gay content of Glee, Parker's favorite author Bret Easton Ellis sparked some controversy by tweeting last night that he said, "I like the idea of Glee, but why is it that every time I watch an episode I feel like I've stepped into a puddle of HIV which, you know, I didn't think Victoria Jackson's comments were that outrageous, and like, this is, you know, Bret Easton Ellis obviously likes to use colorful language to evoke emotion, but I don't get what the big deal about this is. They're fucking tweets. People can speak their mind and say outrageous things, and nobody should get fucking worked up over this. I think it's silly. But I had to include it because, I know, Parker, you love Bret Easton Ellis.
That I do. And it's especially silly for people to be mad about this, like, that he's being insensitive towards gay people. Like, the dude has had more gay sex, like, than the average Glee watcher. So it's silly to be upset about this. Like, just absurd.
Yeah,
I think putting that much effort into getting mad about something called a tweet should probably be examined a little more closely.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a thought.
But yeah, I'm gonna start using that as a euphemism for when, you know, we watch a bad movie. I'll be like, I feel like I stepped into a puddle of HIV when I watched Dr. Caligari last night. And the final piece of nerd news, a sad piece of nerd news. Adult film star Hunter Bryce passed away, her agent confirmed on Wednesday. I only mention this, a lot of you probably don't know who Hunter Bryce is, but I always like to put the word out there when an adult film performer passes away, because the last thing you want to do is being caught jerking off to a dead woman. So delete all your Hunter Bryce porno from your hard drive, and the woman's dead. Show some respect, for Christ's sake.
I'm going to disagree with you wholeheartedly on this, because I feel that most dead porn stars were like really wild and died in like overdosing car accidents, and therefore are the best porn stars. So I feel that once a porn star has died, that's a pretty good recommendation on whether or not you should watch their movies.
You should at least clean up with a black sock.
Oh, classy. All right. So let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The first DVD we have is Rabbit Hole from last year, starring Nicole Kidman and Aaron Eckhart, directed by John Cameron Mitchell. This is the extraordinary story of Becca and Howie. 8 months ago, they had a picture-perfect life with their young son. Now they are posing as normal in the wake of an enormous loss, blindly looking for footing in a sea of new emotions. This is their remarkably moving journey of a couple finding their way back to love. Now, that sounds nothing like a movie that we would ever talk about on Junk Food Dinner, but I include this only because it's directed by John Cameron Mitchell, and I really love Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which he wrote and directed, and I give him an A for effort for his art film porn hybrid Short Bus, which was not a very good film, but like I said, I got to give him credit for kind of trying to bring pornography into mainstream filmmaking in that one. But yeah, this sounds sappy and trite at best. It's PG-13, so nobody will be sucking any penises in it, which is disappointing for a John Cameron Mitchell film.
It's implied, though.
Yeah, but nevertheless, with John Cameron Mitchell attached, I might feel obligated to check this out. And I think it's got fairly good critical acclaim as well, so might be worth looking into. The next DVD I have is Ip Man 2, Legend of the Grandmaster, Collector's Edition 2010. International superstar Donnie Yen reprises his iconic role as the real-life Kung Fu Grandmaster Ip Man, widely known as the man who brought Wing Chun to the world with the help of his star pupil Bruce Lee. Master Ip, a new arrival in British-occupied Hong Kong, wants to open a martial arts academy to teach his unique Wang Chun style. Or Wing Chun style, a corrupt group of martial arts masters led by Master Hung refuses to allow him to teach in peace until he proves himself as a kung fu master. But yeah, Ip Man, the original one, was a really good piece of Hong Kong cinema. Again, it's a real true story about Ip Man, who was the guy who taught Bruce Lee how to kick ass. So yeah, I've heard the sequel is good as well. So if you like a good martial arts film, definitely check that out. Next DVD I have is Blood-Sucking Nazi Zombies from 1981. I know very little about this film, but during a World War II, a small German squadron was assigned the task of carrying a shipment of Nazi gold across the African desert. Along the way, the squadron was ambushed by allies, and only one American soldier survived who knew the secret. Years later, the American survivors tell the story of the cutthroat German treasure hunter who promptly murders him. The American survivor's son, upon learning of his father's death, vows to travel to Africa to find the lost gold himself. While the desert is hazardous enough by itself, the dangers lurking around the oasis are more than any treasure hunter ever imagined, as flesh-eating Nazi zombies stand in their way to an unknown fortune. So, 1981, Nazi zombies, that's all you had to say. I'm sold. So, this was also known in Germany as the Oasis of the Living Dead. One of those in the long lines of zombie movies that just tack of the living dead at the end of their movie and try to sell tickets. But I don't know. I have heard nothing about this, so it could be total shit. But this is making its DVD debut this week, and it sounds like one you may want to check out.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah.
Sounds delightful.
Right. Next DVD I have is FUBAR, Balls to the Wall. This is the sequel to the Canadian heavy metal, white trash comedy FUBAR. Have you guys ever seen that movie?
I've never seen it. We had it at the video store, and a couple people recommended it, but I just always kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, I've had several people recommend it to me, because of my love of similar Canadian white trash comedy like Trailer Park Boys. And it's supposed to be kind of like along the, like a Spinal Tap meets Trailer Park Boys kind of thing. And I've heard it's pretty funny, so this is the sequel to that coming out on DVD this week, so I might have to check out the original and then give this a whirl. Hey, how about this? Did you guys know Steven Seagal is still making movies?
Sure didn't.
Yeah, apparently he is. Out on DVD this week is Born to Raise Hell from 2010, starring Steven Seagal as a hardcore Interpol agent assigned to an Eastern European task force to target gun trafficking and dope running through the Balkans. So yeah, Steven Seagal back to his old tricks, I guess, after his pretty good turn in Machete. I guess he's back to his old ways and kicking out the ridiculous action movies. So, you know, I welcome that. There's few pleasures in life better than, you know, coming home drunk on a Saturday evening and catching the tail end of a Steven Seagal movie on HBO or something. So while he's old and fat and kind of a joke, I still welcome a new Steven Seagal installment into my life. So Born to Raise Hell. Look for that on DVD this week.
So much as he doesn't stop enforcing the law on reality television, this is fine by me. But if it gets in the way of his real career, then I think he should stop making the movies.
Right.
Now, was that straight to DVD or?
I would have to imagine so.
Yeah, that sounds right. Cut out the middle, man.
Right. another DVD I have this week is Worst Horror Movie Ever Made from 2005. Now, with a title like that, I gotta figure this has to be pretty bad. But I don't think it'll be the worst horror movie ever made, because I think it's probably just a mediocre offering, and they figure, title it Worst Horror Movie Ever Made, maybe it'll move some units. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it looks ridiculous. It's a romantic couple host a card game that goes horribly wrong. All of their friends wind up dead. The lovers decide to spend the rest of their days together free instead of languishing in prison. Thus begins their odyssey, a journey which takes them to every horror experience that can be imagined, and then they experience things that should never be imagined. Watch archetypal villains in a new light, including Jesus, who does something bizarre with the holes in his hands. This is no mere horror spoof. See what horror magazines have been raving about. It also includes the full-length and out-of-print Beelzebub flick Ass Monster.
So, oh my god. Is this a brain damage release?
I don't know. But yeah,
it sounds like it.
It looks absolutely bottom of the barrel. But you know, some of our listeners might be into that. So if you are feeling adventurous, check out Worst Horror Movie Ever Made. Lastly, I just wanted to quickly talk about a few movies that are getting Blu-ray released this week. We've got Tokyo Gore Police from 2008. It's getting the Blu-ray treatment. I really love this movie. I actually ordered this Blu-ray. It's some crazy Japanese weirdness, the likes of which you have never seen. Some of the special effects and just the crazy shit that happens in that movie, it's just nonstop weirdness, and I really enjoy it. I actually pre-ordered this Blu-ray, and I can't wait till it shows up in the mail. Yeah, I think Machine Girl gets released next week, which is
awesome,
from the same people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw Machine Girl first. Tokyo Gore Police is Machine Girl turned up a notch, and that's saying something in and of itself. So
yeah, so if you haven't seen that, check that out. Also getting some more Japanese stuff getting a Blu-ray release this week is Goemon. It's crafted with over 2,050 visual effects. The director of Kashern weaves action with Japanese history and folklore into a moving masterpiece evocative of the classic Robin Hood tale. Once a lethal ninja, Goemon puts down his sword to master the art of robbing the nobility to share the stash with the less fortunate. But yeah, I've heard this is actually, you know, this is not nearly as weird as, you know, the Tokyo Gore Police and stuff, but I've heard this is actually a pretty impressive Japanese kind of fable. So if you like Japanese cinema, check that out now that's on Blu-ray. Also, if you like Japanese cinema, but you'd like some watered-down American-style Japanese cinema based on a video game, both Mortal Kombat movies are available on Blu-ray this week.
Oh, my God.
The original Mortal Kombat from 1995 and Mortal Kombat Annihilation from 1997 you can pick up in high def.
Finally.
Even worse down the list, speaking of Crow movies, The Crow 2, City of Angels, and The Crow, Wicked Prayer, directed by Lance Mungia, who directed Six Dream Samurai, which we talked about last week, comes out on a Blu-ray 2-pack. So if you want to watch some really terrible cinema in high def, pick that up. And finally, last thing I wanted to mention, as this is our 420 show, and what's better than watching cartoons one year high, two classic Hanna-Barbera shows, Space Cadets and Young Samson from the 70s, come out on DVD this week. I have a special place in my heart for the shitty 60s and 70s Hanna-Barbera animation, and so I always get really excited when more of that shit comes out on DVD, and I just cross my fingers that we can see a release of Chattanooga Cats on DVD sometime soon.
A Blu-ray.
Yeah. And finally, just in time for Earth Day, Captain Planet and the Planeteers Season 1 finally on DVD. So all you 90s kids can relive saving the Earth with your favorite green...
Planeteers.
Yeah. Green-conscious superhero. That was one of the fucking worst shows ever, by the
way. Whoa.
Have you seen it recently?
No.
Garb.
I don't plan to either, yeah.
But I know it has like a pretty big fan base among kids our age who grew up watching it, but it is awful.
But yeah, now you can relive fighting over who gets to be fire and who has to be heart.
Totally. All right, so we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to jump into our first cannabis-friendly film of the evening, The Stoned Age from 1994, so stick around.
The reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like they are. Come on, baby.
Don't fear the reaper.
Baby, take my hand.
Don't fear the reaper.
We'll be able to fly.
Don't fear the reaper.
Baby, I'm your man.
La la la.
Every Saturday night, all they do is the same old thing.
So you got a plan tonight or what?
I got a radically hellacious plan. Fit the jag just to take the edge off, get those chicks all horn-dogged out.
What chicks?
Hanging with the buds.
Check it out, man.
Stack, Tack Meister, hang a loogie on it.
Hey, man, I got some chicks!
Searching for a party.
What's the ratio here, man?
Like 35-3 out here.
Staying out of trouble.
Are you gonna boogie with the foxes tonight? Now, if you wanna get these chicks in the mood, shake it, man.
I need some ID.
Looking for some chicks.
Let's party.
But tonight, they're about to face their greatest challenge.
Hurts.
Man, I'm gonna scorch my shorts.
Man, we got chicks!
Aaron, you guys better not be here when he gets back.
Come here, my chicks!
Are those, real booby shells?
Let's go.
Blowing! She ain't even naked!
Damn, you kicked his ass.
They're like a pack of wild dogs. They're probably out there right now playing in the ice tray.
So paranoid. They're not that lame.
Attention, hold it. Assume the prone position.
What the hell are you doing with my daughter?
Man, these are our chicks.
You come here, you think the chick's gonna go for it because you got some Ox 45?
And these are talls, man.
The Stone Day.
Hey, so where's your friend?
What? You just want to take a number?
Yeah! She's hot for me, man.
Yeah, then you woke up.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 55. Before we jump into our first movie of the evening, The Stoned Age, I just want to say, you know, look, I know it's stupid. We're doing a 420 show, and before you start thinking that your favorite podcasters are some dreadlocked fish-listening, High Times reading idiots. We know it's stupid and we know it's juvenile, but the opportunity arised, and we thought what better time to talk about some of our favorite cannabis themed or cannabis friendly films than on this date. I mean, we certainly aren't advocating marijuana use to anybody, although we're certainly not against it by any means either. In fact, you know, with a lot of the movies we watch on this, pot can certainly help get you through, that's for sure. That being said, if this is if this offends your sensibilities in any way, we apologize, and we're not nearly as retarded as our 420 show would imply. But that being said, yeah, I think this is a fun opportunity to talk about some of these movies and a good excuse to talk about the Stone Age, which I will let Parker tell you all about.
Also, if you are offended by our Stoner show, just remember that like a month ago, we did 9 movies based on books. So we're pretty smart.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, we got to counteract it somehow.
Yeah, we're pretty classy up in here. Right. But this movie, The Stoned Age, is from 1994. It was co-written by Rich Wilkes, who wrote Glory Days that we talked about a long time ago. He's also written other cool stuff like Airheads and the Jerky Boys movie and other things that you probably were really into when you were 14. Also the Triple X movies somehow. He went from doing movies about slacker punk rockers to Ice Cube killing the president or whatever happened in that movie.
Wasn't that Vin Diesel?
Yeah, in the first one, and then I think Ice Cube was in the second too.
You know what? I don't even care. Truth be, as soon as I asked that, I was like, I don't care.
The Stoned Age is a movie I grew up watching. You know, I was watching this around the time that I got into Richard Linklater movies and Kevin Smith movies and things like that. And this movie became a large part of the things that I would say to people all throughout high school in terms of referencing movies. You know, I think I referenced this, like, I would quote this movie more than I would quote Mallrats and Clerks and other things like that that were all part of the lexicon of anybody our age who watched those movies. Me and my brothers, like, we freaked out about this movie all the time. Like, it came on USA Up All Night a bunch of times in the waning days of USA Up All Night, and I had a VHS copy of it, and I just watched the crap out of this movie. This movie, while it's not as impactful as, you know, something like if you watch Linklater's Slacker or Clerks or something, like, it doesn't make you want to rush out and make a movie like those movies do, but it's still very funny. It's probably not as funny as those movies either, but I guess I'm not selling this movie too well. But it's still very, very good, and it still sticks with you in a way that those movies perhaps don't. I probably couldn't watch Slacker nowadays, even though I loved it as a kid, and I probably can't watch Mallrats nowadays, even though I loved it as a kid. But I can still watch The Stone Age, and it's still very funny to me. And because of The Stone Age, I will forever say things like it's casual, and you know how it is, and refer to talls all the time, and advise people to not worm chicks, and things like that. But as for the movie itself, it stars Michael Coppola as Joe and Bradford Tatum as Hubs. Michael Coppola, you may remember as Stair Person 2 in The People Under the Stairs, or Student in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ooh.
Illustrious.
He also played Hellhound in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and in Point Break, he was a character named Passion for Slashin'.
Yeah, so, he's instantly recognizable for his long mane of red hair.
Yeah, he looks like a majestic lion. So these two guys, they're kind of stoner guys in the 70s, and they're driving around, and they really want to get high and drunk and meet chicks. They meet up with a fellow named Tack, played by Clifton Collins Jr., who was in The Rules of Attraction, and who I fucking love. I think he's a marvelous actor in this and in other things that I've seen of him. But this Tack, he's a wormy dude. He finds out that this guy named Crump's brother has some real fine chicks out by this Frankie Avalon place. And so he proceeds to try to worm these chicks and get a ride down to this area while Crump's brother is at work, I think, or something like that. And, you know, along the way, he meets up with Joe and Hubs. And Joe and Hubs proceed to worm Tack's chicks. They take his money and they leave him at a gas station. And they go meet up with these chicks. And they try to persuade them with Schnappster that they should make out. And then crazy hijinks ensue. Gary Busey's son shows up for a little while. Taylor Negron is goddamn hilarious. As he usually is in movies that he has cameos in. And all kinds of other wacky shenanigans involving peeing in ice cube trays. and a lot of stoner humor and a lot of fun stuff. And like I said, I love this movie. I think it's hilarious. How do you guys feel about this?
I had never seen this. You had talked about it a number of times, usually in context of talking about Clifton Collins Jr., who's great. But, I mean, I think at first glance, it would be very easy to kind of write this off as like a second-rate Dazed and Confused or you know, any of those other kind of movies about the 70s that came out in the 90s. But I think this movie has a real charm to it. I think the cast all work together really well. I think they all feel like they're actually friends. A lot of good stuff on the soundtrack. Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching this. I enjoyed it a good deal more than I initially thought I was going to. And I realized that my entire life I've been inadvertently quoting this by saying just some dude when anyone asked me who someone is. So I thought that was cool. Yeah, Clifton Collins Jr. is fantastic in this. Jake Busey is in it for like 2 seconds, and he's real smarmy and gross. And I thought it was awesome that there's a character named Mike Dick.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's Mike Dick in this movie hangs out with another guy named Mike New York, and Mike Dick lives in New York.
Yeah.
So I think there's some
who knows? Secret,
there's some Illuminati shit in this movie.
Yeah. I also really like, and this it's just something that helped this movie feel really real, is that there are like the kind of hierarchy of these people, you know, like Tack has like latched on to Joe and Hubs, and then like all the second rate like Hanky, and you know what I mean? So it's got this kind of this hierarchy feel that feels like a real kind of community of these kids. It reminded me of growing up around people like this and like the older kids and then our group and then people below us and stuff. So I don't know. It just it was very relatable and very, I don't know, easy. And yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Parker, like you, I also grew up watching this movie. I actually, it's funny, I discovered this and the movie we're going to talk about next, Heavy Metal, on VHS right around the same time. And I don't think it's any coincidence. It was also kind of around the same time I first smoked weed. So these all kind of went hand in hand. So it's kind of it was like a rite of passage for me, being a young teenager and seeing these movies and stuff. But yeah, I like this quite a bit. I think I was drawn to it initially was on the box alone. It says they have a quote from somebody from like Variety magazine saying better than Dazed and Confused. And I don't know if that quote was taken out of context or whatnot. I don't think it's better than Dazed and Confused. I think, you know, Dazed and Confused is a much better, I don't know, movie, and it has a little bit more depth about it. But this might actually be like a more fun movie than Dazed and Confused, I think. It definitely, like Mark said, it does the characters, for the most part, seem kind of real. I mean, if you've ever been kind of a teenage guy just driving around with your friends, getting into mischief, you could kind of relate to that. And it does have a lot of great performances, and it's endlessly quotable. One thing, though, about this movie, and I think I mentioned this to you before, but rewatching this movie now, as I hadn't seen it since I was a teenager, it is so fucking, like, misogynistic in a certain way.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, these girls are just, like, property to be claimed by these dudes. It's like whoever gets to these girls first basically gets to fuck them, and, like, you know, I don't know. It just seems very, very misogynistic in that outlook on things, like, where... you know, girls are just property to be claimed by dudes, and I don't know. And maybe that's like the Neanderthal, you know, instincts that they're kind of referring to in the title of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are acting as if it is the Stone Age in some aspects with their behavior. You know, it's not enough where it like turns me off to the movie, but looking back on it, it's not something that I really picked up on when I was, you know, 15, but now it's like really glaring. But yeah, I mean, I still like this movie quite a bit. I think it's funny. And, you know, like Mark said, a lot of good music in the soundtrack, a lot of Blue Oyster Cult, which I'm a big fan of, and it seems very fitting. For this movie, it seems like the right kind of music. Ironically enough, I guess they in the movie they were originally supposed to use Led Zeppelin as the band that the guys kind of obsessed over. But when, you know, securing the rights to that music proved way out of the budget, they settled for Blue Oyster Cult instead. But nevertheless, I think it was, I think that's almost a better fit, because it almost makes the movie a little bit more unique and not as obvious. And I think, like, the scene where they're at the Blue Oyster Cult concert and the laser beam hits Joe in the eye and he sees a giant eyeball following him the rest of the movie, I think that's hilarious. And, you know, there's a lot of Southern California landmarks referenced and stuff, so it's, you know, it's a cool movie. There are some things that seem kind of chronologically incorrect. I mean, they don't nail all the 70s stuff. Like, you see, like, 90s cars driving by them every now and again in this movie, which, you know, I mean, for a movie that I'm sure didn't have a huge budget, it's hard to get everything correct. But nevertheless, I don't think any of that takes away from the fact that it is a fun movie to watch. It is very funny and endlessly quotable. So, yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think going back to the misogynistic Neanderthal sort of things, the only guy who's really not like that is Joe, and I think that's why he's the hero. I mean, even Hubs, who's Joe's buddy and who's, you know, one of the main protagonists in the film, he's not portrayed as likable by any means, really.
Right. Like, no, that's true.
So I think that everybody in this, aside from Joe, is supposed to be viewed as some sort of villain on some level.
Right.
I don't know. It did seem very strange that at no point these girls were like, you know, we're people. And we can hear you talking about us like this because we're standing here. So I thought that was kind of strange. But
it was a different time. That's how they did it back then.
The 90s.
Haven't you seen Mad Men? It was like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that being said, Renee Allman, who plays Lainey, the object of desire for most of the guys in the movie, is fucking pretty incredibly hot, especially in this movie.
That's true. She looks like the chick from that Virgin Killers album.
Right. Which is funny, because the chick from that Virgin Killers album, the Scorpions album, is like 14. And that album cover is banned in most countries for being child pornography. True story. But yeah, she was also in Showdown in Little Tokyo, which we've got to cover at some point on the show.
That's true.
And she was in Encino Man, which
we don't have to cover on the show.
But we will anyway. I'm sure that we will.
I think one of the reasons that I never watched this, and Kevin, you sort of brought this up, when I was younger, and I, you know, this is one of those covers that I know immediately. Like, when we've talked about it, I knew the cover. And the cover is actually what put me off to watching this movie, because I thought it looked retarded.
Yeah, it's not a very good...
No, and it's not a very good representation of the film.
Right.
So, yeah, that was always just, like, it's instantly recognizable, but I always thought it looked real stupid.
Yeah. No, I get that. But, yeah, you know, this is just one of those movies that it's an aimless night out with a bunch of guys looking to get fucked up and get laid, and you know, chaos ensues. I mean, it's a pretty well worn territory, but nevertheless, I think this one definitely stands out because of it is so you know, despite the fact that these guys are kind of bonehead assholes, and they all are kind of likable, and you kind of knew guys like this in high school.
Yeah.
And you know, I think, you know, a lot of, you know, there's definitely something to latch onto for fans of cinema that we enjoy. But yeah, I'd say this is definitely worth checking out. Very funny.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, though it's well-worn territory, it feels very comfortable, and it feels like people you know, and it feels like nights that you've had, especially, you know, if you are our age and you actually did drive around. And so I can certainly appreciate it on that level, and like I said, I like the cast, and I had a good time, so I would recommend this.
Yeah, me too. It's great, and yeah, I don't know. It's just great, and it's always stuck with me. Like I said, I'm still constantly quoting this, whereas I'm not quoting Mallrats and Clerks anymore. Another thing that I wanted to add real quick is that the director, James Melkonian, worked in the editorial department on Reform School Girls.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest movies we've ever talked about in our entire lives. Not just on the show, but in general.
In life.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, right after this, he directed that Jerky Boys movie, which is pretty terrible. But it does have Paul Bartel in it, so.
Can't hate that.
Oh, I also wanted to mention that in this, they talk about how schnapps will get six fat chicks totally fucked up, and that's true. that's totally 100% true. And another thing I found interesting about this, watching this, at one point, they talk about how, you know, if you're playing a wingman for your buddy and you, like, take care of the ugly broad while he's making out with a hot broad, that's called jumping on a grenade. And here we are, like, 20 years later or whatever, and that's fully in the American lexicon, thanks to Jersey Shore. So I think that's funny that, I mean, this movie probably didn't start that, but they were totally foreseeing the future. And I find that good.
Being in war started then.
You think there were, like, a lot of fat, ugly chicks in war?
No, I think jumping on grenades is probably where that phrase came from.
Probably. Also, in Vietnam, there were a lot of fat, ugly chicks.
Well, yeah.
That's just part of history. Yeah. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a different movie.
Heavy Metal.
That is called Heavy Metal.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call in to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We are very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them Reddit sent you.
Presents Heavy Metal, a trip beyond the future to a universe you've never seen before, a universe of mystery, a universe of passionate fantasies, a universe of terrifying evil, a universe of magic. Heavy Metal.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 55. The next movie we're going to be taking a look at is Heavy Metal from 1981. This, like the movie we talked about last week, Rock and Roll, is a Canadian animated movie that was based on the sci-fi fantasy magazine of the same name, which was a staple among fantasy pot-smoking nerds for a long time. So finally, they decided to capitalize on the popularity of the magazine and kind of the popularity of adult-themed animation, which had kind of been jump-started by Ralph Bakshi and the like, and release a movie based on the source material, based on stories that came actually from the Heavy Metal magazine. This is kind of a star-studded affair. This was Ivan Reitman produced this, and it features a lot of famous Canadian voice actors and some non-Canadians, but many Canadian voice actors, including John Candy, Eugene Levy, and Harold Ramis, and a lot of voices that you'll probably recognize. It also features a soundtrack of popular hard rock acts from the time, including stuff like Sammy Hagar, Cheap Trick, and Blue Oyster, the aforementioned Blue Oyster Cult. A lot of Blue Oyster Cult this episode. Oh, it also features some writing by Dan O'Bannon, who wrote and directed Return of the Living Dead, which we love. So, yeah, it had a lot of cool people involved and a lot of interesting source material. And the end result is a movie that I love very dearly. It's very juvenile. It's very cheesy, especially by 2011 standards. But nevertheless, it has a certain charm about it that you really can't deny. So basically, the movie is split up into little vignettes, which, like I said, were based on actual stories that appeared in the magazine. It starts off with a guy driving a convertible through space, landing on Earth, and presenting his daughter with this glowing orb that he has brought back from his journeys called the Lochnar. The Lochnar, in very quick succession, kills the father and presents itself to the daughter and tells her various tales of terror. And that's when we kind of get into these little short stories. We have one about a guy named Harry Canyon, which is, he's like a futuristic cab driver in a dystopian New York City in the year 2031. And he picks up, you know, this like beautiful woman. There we get one of the first cartoon nude sex scenes in the movie, just one of many. This is one of the first times I ever saw animated tits, which I'm not a huge fan of, but, you know, whatever. I'll take, I guess. We also have a story of Den, which features the voice of John Candy as this nerdy teenager who finds a green meteorite and it turns him into a hulking superhero in another dimension, and he has to save yet another big-titted woman and promptly have sex with her. Then we have the story of Captain Stern. This features the voice talents of Joe Flaherty and Eugene Levy, also from SCTV with John Candy. And this is about, you know, a space station captain named Captain Stern, who's on trial for numerous ridiculous charges. And it also has the voice of John Vernon, who we love, who was in Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Savage Streets. All kinds of, I'm not going to go through all of them, but there's just all kinds of, as you would expect, crazy sci-fi fantasy stories played out with big-breasted women, mystical creatures, a lot of sword fighting and rock music, and it's just all over the place. I mean, it's really, if you're a nerdy teenage boy, it's really all that you can ever want out of a film. And yeah, I loved it. It was unavailable for a long, long time in the 80s on home video, just due to, I think, music rights. They had a hard time getting the money together to secure the music rights for home video. It eventually got a home video release. I think it was like in 1996, mid-90s. And that's when I was first introduced to it. I picked up the VHS of it and loved it instantly. Since then, it has gotten quite a cult status. I mean, it was fairly popular when it was originally released. The soundtrack was fairly well-selling, especially due to all the popular artists that were on it. But since it was never available on home video and rarely ever shown on cable television, it kind of got forgotten for a little while until its re-release in 1996. Afterwards, there was quite a lot of interest in it. They made a, not a sequel per se, but kind of like a homage called Heavy Metal 2000 in their 2000, which is horrible, not fit to bear the name Heavy Metal. I mean, it again is based off the stories from the original Heavy Metal magazine, but features music by bands like Korn and the Insane Clown Posse, so if that gives you any idea of what to expect. But yeah, it's unlike Rock and Roll, which we talked about last week. This one, you know, kind of goes balls to the wall, you know, as expected, with the source material being fairly groundbreaking for the time, featuring a lot of nudity and hyper violence, which the movie does as well, and some drug humor and, you know, of course, foul language and stuff like that. So I think where Rock and Roll failed in terms of kind of only going halfway, Heavy Metal fully succeeds, and it is definitely an interesting watch. Like I said, it definitely caters to the nerdy 14-year-old boy inside of you, but if you can get past kind of the silliness of it, it's an entertaining watch for sure. But yeah, what do you guys think of 1981's Heavy Metal?
I watched the crap out of this as a youngster. I think there were many, many sexless weekends in high school where I would watch this and play Magic Cards and play Risk until the early morning hours.
I think, just and, real quick, I think we should change the name of the podcast to Sexless Weekends.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always enjoyed this. The music, although I would never listen to, like, many of these bands that I would not listen to outside of watching heavy metal. But like during the movie, I'm always like, man, this is like the best song ever written. This is so good. you know, and a lot of these stories are cool. The animation is great. I was excited when I was watching this because, you know, like watching the credits and stuff, it said that Dan O'Bannon wrote some of this. And I was like, oh, shit, I never realized that. This is going to be awesome. I wonder which one it is. I was like, maybe it's this zombie one or maybe it's this other hardcore one. And then I was watching the credits at the end and he wrote the story that involves the very first story, that is an astronaut riding to Earth in a convertible, which to say that that's a story written by anybody is sort of a bit of a stretch. But that's the part he did, I guess. So
it's just the end of Dark Star, kind of.
But yeah, so the first story in this is probably, well, the first real story is probably my favorite, the one with Harry Canyon. I love that the backgrounds and stuff that, you know, takes place in a futuristic, like, New York City or whatever, and the backgrounds are all very, like, dirty and bland and kind of, like, colorless, and I think that really makes it feel like a comic book, way before motion comics ever came out. I mean, this really sort of looks like a comic book in motion. So I've always liked that about it. You know, watching this, I haven't watched it in a few years, but I mean, it's always the same. Every time I take a few years of a break from watching this, I always come back and I'm like, well, maybe I won't like it this time around. Maybe I'm too old. And I'm always wrong. It's always so very awesome to watch this movie. One thing I realized while watching it this time is that anytime I've watched this movie in the past, it seems like I've always turned it off right around the time of the last story. The last story in this is about a half an hour long, and it's about this crazy, you know, warrior broad that takes out these weird robot zombie things. And I think I've only seen that, like, despite the fact that I've seen this, you know, a billion times, I think I've only seen that story like three times. But it's all right. I think the reason I don't like it is because they don't establish that broad to be like a super badass. Like, they're like, oh my god, these zombie weirdo volcano creatures are ruining our entire civilization. What can we do? We better call this broad in and she'll save us. And all she really does is like beat up two guys in a bar and then get beat up by like the head bad guy for a while. Like, it's very anticlimactic. Like, you would think that she would just come in and kick ass on thousands of these guys, but she doesn't. She just kind of beats up and then barely ekes out a victory, and that's that. So I think that's why I don't like that story. Every other story in this is awesome. I like how the Lochnar meets up with this little girl, and he's all, hey, let me tell you these horror stories from around the universe about true evil, and also this one story about a sexy robot and a couple of stoners, because that'll break it up a little bit. But yeah, this is good. So.
Yeah, I can't really add anything that you guys haven't already said. This movie is fantastic. It really does feel like just like a complete version of Rock and Rule, and there's no furries in it, which I like. So yeah, it's great. The animation is awesome. The voice work is good. A lot of recognizable, excellent people worked on it. I did not put it together because I watched these kind of far apart. How much Blue Oyster Cult is playing a part in this episode, and I think that that's super funny. now that we're talking about it, but yeah. This is great. I did not see Heavy Metal 2000, and I have no plans to do so. But yeah, I like this stuff. I never read Heavy Metal. Yeah. I would kind of like flip through it, you know, at Comic Town or wherever. But it was never one that I would read.
Right.
But maybe I should have because it's probably as good.
Yeah, you probably never read it because you probably never hung out in a basement listening to Black Sabbath amidst a bunch of blacklight posters smoking cheap weed out of a wizard bong. Because that's the only setting that you would ever read Heavy Metal magazine in.
God damn it, I wish I was doing that right now. man, that doesn't sound bad at all. but, yeah. This movie rules. If you haven't seen it and you like wizard bongs, sexy chicks, robots, zombies, flying cars, comic books, swords, space swords. Yeah, there's nothing you won't like about this unless you don't like Canadian things.
Right. But this movie's just a lot of fun. And I think listeners to our show, if you haven't seen it, would definitely enjoy it if you like the kind of movies that we normally talk about. Now, it's interesting, you know, we talked about Heavy Metal 2000, and I guess that's kind of more or less been disowned by, fans of heavy metal. But there's actually recently been talk of making an official sequel to Heavy Metal. I guess Kevin Eastman, one of the co-creators of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, he is now the owner and publisher of Heavy Metal magazine, and he wants to do a sequel to this with Paramount Pictures. And some of the directors that have shown interest in wanting to direct segments include David Fincher, Guillermo del Toro, Zack Snyder, Gore Verbinski, and some of the actors who have been interested in doing roles are Mark Osborne and Jack Black. And James Cameron has even been interested in co-producing. So, I don't know. It's hard to... I mean, the time for this movie, I think, has kind of come and gone. You know, I think this is a very, you know, late 70s, early 80s kind of movie. And so I know how well it would fare in today's market. But, you know, and if they, again, tried to update the music with some shitty nu metal or whatever they would try to, you know, use as the music for this, I think it could have mixed results. But nevertheless... it's hard for me not to get excited about the possibly having R-rated animation on the big screen again, which, again, is another kind of relic from the past that we don't see very often anymore. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that ever comes to fruition, and if so, how it turns out. But while we wait, in the meantime, definitely check out Heavy Metal. I think this is actually getting a Blu-ray release sometime later this year, I think in the next couple months, and I will definitely be picking that up and seeing how it fares in high definition. One thing about this movie, I mean, the animation is certainly not stellar by any means. It's, they use a lot of rotoscoping, and some of it's a bit choppy and grainy, as you would expect from an animated movie from 1981. Although they did have several animation studios working on this at the same time, so that kind of lends to the lack of consistency in some of the animation styles. But nevertheless, it's never bad enough that it detracts from the movie, I don't think. One of the only things that I can throw into Rock and Rule's court is the animation, at least from a technical standpoint, is a little bit better in that film, obviously because it was some years later and because I think it had maybe a little bit more of a budget. But nevertheless, while the animation does seem a little choppy by 2010 standards, I still think it's very watchable and a lot of fun. So,
Yeah, I just wanted to say about the, like, remake/sequel that they're doing, or talking about doing. Jonan Vasquez, who did Invader Zim and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, is apparently working on that. And that gives me a lot of optimism for it, because that dude is brilliant.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. anything he's involved with, I'm always excited for.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I guess that just about wraps it up for Heavy Metal. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about 1972's Blood Freak, so stick around.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends. You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
See Blood Freak, horrifying addicted monster whose thirst for an addict's blood will lead you to a horror beyond belief. Blood Freak, to survive, addicts must die.
Only things can get back to normal.
See Blood Freak's horrifying revenge for the woman he loves.
Ah!
Junk Food Dinner, episode 55. The last movie on the show tonight is 1972's Blood Freak. This is a Something Weird video release that I picked up when I was working at the video store. I waited patiently for this to get marked out because people, sadly, were not renting it. And when it did, I snatched it up immediately. I actually ended up with a pretty sizable stack of Something Weird stuff from my time there. But this one, I like a lot. The film itself concerns a biker named Herschel who finds a girl with a flat tire and gives her a ride home. When he takes her there, he finds out that her sister is having a party where they do drugs. And he is initially not into that because he likes the Bible. But he also likes these babes and decides to kind of go for it. Then things get a little hazy. He gets a job at this turkey farm, and they feed him a turkey that they had kind of been doing weird tests on. And as a result, he turns into a turkey monster with a giant papier-mâché head that thirsts for the blood of drug addicts. And he then goes out and kills a bunch of dopers. And it's hilarious. Interspersed throughout the movie, we have a narrator who says a bunch of really cryptic and occasionally stupid things while smoking in what appears to be some sort of den. This movie, I think, is really funny and really goofy and very strange. The box has something like the world's first anti-drug Christian killer turkey movie, and I would say it's probably the world's only. This movie was written and directed by two guys, Brad Grinter and Steve Hawks. Brad Grinter, he only directed 5 movies. One of them was Flesh Feast, which he also was the narrator for. So not a lot of other stuff came from these guys, but I think that this is pretty ridiculous. I picked this because I love it, but I don't know if you guys are going to, so I will hesitantly ask what you thought of 1972's Blood Freak.
Yeah, I was aware of this movie, I think, solely because of you. I knew that you had this in your collection, and you had talked about it prior to doing it on the show. I had never seen it before, but I knew its reputation solely based on the fact that the like you said, the papier-mâché turkey head that the killer wears in this movie is kind of notorious for being just like one of the worst and weirdest monsters in B-movie history. And it is pretty silly. That being said, you know, the movie itself, I mean, almost everything about it is of the poorest quality. It's very poorly filmed. The camera is very shaky at some points. The sound is awful. The editing is bad. The acting is wooden and stiff and just really, really bad. That being said, though, there are quite a few enjoyable things about this movie. I like the early 70s psychedelic soundtrack to it.
Yeah.
I think Anne, played by Dana Cullivan, who is kind of like the love interest of Herschel and who initially gets him hooked on the killer weed that inevitably, she gets him addicted, and then, you know, he comes back to avenge getting addicted. I think that woman, Dana Gullivan, who plays Anne, is maybe one of the hottest women that I've ever seen in a movie that we've done. I don't know. The things that she wore in that movie, and I don't know, she's just very attractive. And I think just her presence alone, unfortunately, this is the only movie she's ever been in. So I feel like just to feast your eyes upon her, this movie is worth watching. But yeah, this movie, I actually kind of enjoyed this, despite all its all its shortcomings and all its weirdness. This was never a movie that, as a horror movie, is going to scare you, but it's definitely a fun one to watch and kind of make fun of. And if you can go into it with that perspective, I think you'll have a good time watching it. It's definitely interesting to see, like I said, a lot of the early 70s relics that turn up in this movie, whether it be bad hairstyles, bad mustaches, bad clothing, weird furniture, and you know, the director Brad Grinter popping up in between scenes to narrate and give you kind of like a moral. I think he was kind of going for like a Rod Serling Twilight Zone kind of bent to his narration, but it just comes off really weird. And I like how it's kind of a morality tale, like a pro Jesus anti-drug movie, while in a lot of ways it's very pro drug and very violent. I mean, I think this movie actually almost, when it was originally released, almost got an X rating for violence because of some of this. But none of it's really that graphic. It's just kind of silly. But yeah, nevertheless, this is, I mean, as far as bad movies go, this is definitely a fun bad movie. And yeah, I actually probably wouldn't mind watching this again at some point.
Awesome.
Well, this movie kind of confused me. I didn't understand how you could enjoy this movie about a killer chicken and then hate Thanksgiving about an infinitely more likable, way better looking turkey. Or chicken. I think I said chicken. Either way. Well, whatever. It's all birds.
Let me defend that just for a second. Because the thing that I hated about Thanksgiving, it wasn't because it looked bad or it was because it was low budget. Those things I can often always look past. I just hated the fact that how Thanksgiving was so self-aware that, and this is 100% genuine. And I think that is the difference.
Well, yeah, but these guys put 100% of their genuineness into a giant turkey head that looks utterly retarded. I don't like if I was making a movie and I was like, man, we're gonna make this movie about this killer turkey, and then like the effects guys came in and they're like, man, here's the turkey, man, what do you think? I'd be like, all right, we're gonna make this into a comedy, gentlemen. This is now a comedy.
Right.
Well, I when I was reading about this, the filmmakers, Steve and Brad, they had financial backers who at the last minute pulled out, and they were forced to fund this movie entirely by themselves. So I think that that probably had a great deal to do with the paper mache turkey head. That's all. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if they had the money, it probably would have ended up looking like H.R. Giger's Alien or something. even if they had all the money in the world, I'm sure this movie, the turkey would have still looked pretty dumb. Also... I was confused again because this is a big morality tale about don't do drugs and don't eat chickens, don't eat chemicals, and you hated the time changer, which everybody knows that you should be a good person and not kill turkeys because the time changer tells you to, not because of this silly thing.
And to be fair, also, the time changer didn't have anyone getting their legs cut off though.
That is true.
Yeah, but I would love the time changer if it had anybody getting their legs cut off.
Yeah, the time changer probably would have cut the legs off if he ran into any weird Satanists or nihilists or anything. But also, this movie has a director that comes on screen and lays it all out for you, which is one of those things that we've talked about a couple of times that I absolutely hate. There was an olden-timey black-and-white horror movie thing that I don't understand how anybody got it in their head that that would ever be a good idea. But besides that, this movie is, I don't hate it. I couldn't be scared or care one way or another about this turkey headed mutant going around killing anybody because it looked silly. And it looks silly and it's like very bizarre and like dumb and laughable, but it's not silly and dumb and laughable the way that Troll 2 is or the way that Birdemic is. Like the dialogue is all stupid, but you don't laugh at it. It's not like goofy, funny, ironic, funny. It's just, you're just like, wow, what the fuck is this crap? Like, why? How could you just let this happen in a movie and film it? I think it was all right to release. Also, there's a scene where they just show real life turkeys for about 4 or 5 minutes. Just nothing else going on. A bunch of turkeys.
And that being said, turkeys are weird fucking looking animals, man.
I know. They could have just like cut off a turkey head and put it on a stick and like filmed that, and I would have been way more scared because turkey heads are scary.
Oh, God.
Turkey heads are monumentally gross and scary.
I don't think you should advocate the mutilation of animals to make a better film, though.
suppose you're right.
This isn't Milo and Otis.
Also, the guy, what was his name, the main dude?
Herschel.
He's actually also one of their directors of this film.
I see. Well, that dude, there's a scene where like, he's, you know, like making out with that real fine chick, and like they kind of like show his hands groping her, and he has the most gnarled, scarred up, grotesque hands I have ever seen.
Oh, not just his hands, up his entire arms. He must have had like a serious accident at some point in his life, because yeah, he had scars all over his arms, man. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if that was like him, like, I mean, on the hands, it's real noticeable, but I watched like a bad internet copy of this, so I didn't know if that was, if it was going up his arms or if he just had like a really gnarly sunburn. But yeah, it was, it was pretty gross. That was probably the grossest effect in the movie. When it came to the turkey monster killing people, you know, it went the Slithus route years before Slithus, where it was like, hey, I'm going to kill some people. So I just rub blood on their face, rub a little handful of blood on their face.
Yeah.
And while he's rubbing the blood on their face, they just play this same loop of a blood-curdling scream over and over and over, 20 times, maybe 30 times, just over and over and over with the same scream. You see the person who's screaming, you just watch their face in this loop for a long, long while. And it's, I mean, I know you said that Six String Samurai had the most annoying kid with the most enraging sound effect coming out of his mouth ever, but I mean, I wanted to kick in my television about the 50th time that they looped this goddamn scream. I was very upset. And with that being said, I don't know. It's an all right movie, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if I'll watch it again. But it was okay. I've seen worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's by all accounts, it's a terrible, terrible film. But it's what
absolutely.
For me, it's at least a terrible film that you can enjoy, you know, on that same level that you would enjoy things like Troll 2 and Birdemic and stuff. Yeah. It is fun to rip on it. Yeah, there is one pretty excellent. Like you said, the violence in this movie is all pretty tame and laughable, especially with its, you know, the blood. There is one pretty interesting scene towards the end of the movie where, I mentioned, a guy gets his leg cut off, and it's an actual amputee. So it makes for a pretty realistic leg cutting off, despite nothing in this movie being very realistic at all.
I like in that scene how he cuts the guy's leg off and like all this blood is pumping out of the leg, and then for whatever reason the turkey monster like sits down, and then the guy puts the leg on top of the turkey monster's head, so all this blood rushes down the face of the turkey monster for like, I don't know if the turkey monster got tired and winded and had to sit down, but it was still a funny thing. I enjoyed that part.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is one that I have watched a number of times now. I've been waiting to kind of like have an excuse to do it on the show, and I feel like this show was the perfect opportunity. So yeah, I like this, and I would recommend people seeing it, if only because it's an original idea, and the execution is poor, but earnest. So that just about wraps it up for Blood Freak and episode 55. So we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to say goodbye to you.
Sometimes after watching terrible movies, like The Time Changer, Slithers, and Iced Your Junk Food Dinner, hosts get the blues. They become suicidal, and cry deeply all day long like women during a Drew Barrymore movie. The only thing that can make Kevin, Mark, and Barker feel better is more fans on Facebook. Please take a moment of your time, and go, like Junk Food Dinner on Facebook. Each time someone clicks the like button on the JFE page, it puts a smile on the faces of these movie nerds.
That looks good. That looks really good.
We'll be right back.
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 55 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. As always, we welcome your feedback on the show. So if you have any suggestions for movies you'd like to see us cover, or you just have some feedback on how we're doing on the show and want to tell us what you think, or if you just want to praise us endlessly, that's always fun, too. You can send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave us a message on one of the various social network sites, either Twitter or Facebook. Just search Junk Food Dinner and you should find us pretty easily. Or if you'd like to actually have your voice be heard on the show, leave us a voicemail message at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message and let us know what you think of the show, and we'll be happy to play it on the air. Also, if you are on the World Wide Web, why not visit junkfooddinner.com? There you can find all of our past episodes, listen to them directly on the site, or download them later for, listening whenever you want. Also, you can find links to subscribe to us on iTunes and have the podcast directly delivered to your iTunes every week automatically. Also, you can find links to us on Facebook and Twitter, as I mentioned before, and you can find links to all of our friends and various pieces of nerd news. It's really the best place to be on the internet, so give the U-Porn a break for a little bit and head on over to Junk Food Dinner. All right, so next episode is going to be a good one. We're going to be talking about Grotesque from 1988, The Granny from 1995, and Faster from 2010. So that is shaping up to be a fun show, so make sure you tune in for that. So until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner. Saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.